Welcome to the CEN show, where we present the voice of the community. The CommunityEducationNetwork.com is a platform to aid the effort of self and collective improvement. On Monday, November 29th, this past Monday, we had a guest on Conscious Corner, excellent guest, Omar Kulumba Montgomery, who gave an excellent presentation. I encourage all to listen to this program because it was exceptional, really exceptional. So I'm going to share the screen so you can see where you can access that. There's two places where you can access it. So let me share it. Okay, as you can see right here, we're on YouTube. You can see it on YouTube. It's a Conscious Corner, NAACP president, Omar Kulumba Montgomery, Aurora, Colorado, and the title is, the topic is Education Diversity. Now, that's one way you can access it. Another way is through the website, CommunityEducationNetwork.com, and you go to podcast, and there it is again right here, Conscious Corner, yes, Omar Kulumba Montgomery. So that's two ways you can access the show. I encourage everybody to check it out.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Okay, I'm your host, Rasky Mascani. Tonight's topic is Coming Up Compton. Tonight we have two guests who were raised in the city of Compton, California, Ernest Hall and Marlon Potts. Gentlemen, I'm pleased to have you both on the show. Welcome. And let's start with Ernest. How are you, Ernest? And tell us something about yourself, and then we'll go to Marlon.
Okay, Rodrigo, thanks, guys. Thanks for inviting me to the show. You know, again, it's Ernest Hall, and I born and raised in Compton. Went to elementary school at Caldwell Elementary School from kindergarten to the fourth grade. Left there, and we moved to another side of Central, and I went to Longfellow from fifth grade to sixth grade. And at that time, that's when I met Marlon in the fifth grade. After that, I went to Walton, and then to Compton High, and graduated. But the experiences I've had in Compton, was, believe me, it's to none. I mean, growing up back in the 50s and 60s in Compton, it was, I had two bigger brothers, older brothers, and one of them graduated in 58, another one graduated in 65. And I got a chance to run around behind them. And I learned a lot about Compton at a young age. One of the first movies I've ever went to was at the Compton Theater in 1963, and I saw Lilies of the Field. You know, and those are memories that I still have. When I go downtown, when I'm at home and I'm driving down Compton Boulevard, it's just not the same. That's gone. Those are memories that are gone. But I still have a lot of friends that we still talk about that. You know, I feel like some of you guys can still can relate to what I'm saying. I played basketball at Compton High from 10th grade to the 12th grade. Didn't play varsity, you know, back in those days, Compton. And as some of you guys know, Compton was very strong in basketball from the late 50s to the 70s. But I did not play B's for a couple years at Compton. Then left there and went over to Compton College and played for Coach Newman. I'm a Rob, you know Coach Newman very well, I'm sure. But I had a pleasure to play for Coach Newman. And we won a state championship over there. And it was a great experience. Again, growing up in Compton, going to school at Compton High and going to school at Walton, I met a lot of people that I still know today. And Marlon is one of them. Joe Hembrick's one of them. So we stay in contact with them. So,
amen.
Marlon.
Yeah.
Can you tell us the year that you won the championship at Compton College?
Oh, you want me to tell you?
It would be probably 72, but let's see. Yeah, I was there in 72. Yeah, I think it was 72.
That was Ernest Hall won the championship.
Yeah,
it was Ernest Hall. Ernest. Yeah, it was Ernest Hall, please. Don't misunderstand. It was Ernest.
That was 1972 that we won the state championship there.
Okay. Excuse me. That was my fault. I meant to say Ernest.
Sure.
Thanks, Henry.
Yeah, and you had me sweating.
You know,
Okay, so let's get a little background on Marlon, and then you guys can start your presentation.
Okay.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure to speak with you, and really, it's a pleasure to be amongst us, esteemed colleagues. My beginnings in counseling were like I was 1.5 years old, and that was in 1953. About Compton, I have to say it was a very rosy look, because at that young age coming up in Compton, everything I saw on TV was right there in front of me. It looked the same. There was no difference between the white dichotomy and mine. I thought I was in it. So there was a very rosy picture at that very early age. And matter of fact, I had a couple of several Caucasian neighbors, and really got along. Everybody got along swimmingly for a short time. So I did notice the gradual change in the dichotomy of people moving in and other people moving out. And I noticed just that change in our street structure. But I enjoyed it because those people moving in were people that weren't like me and that had the same values that we saw every day. So there was no difference except for we played the same, we believed the same, and we did things the same. We learned from each other. There was interaction. So I went to a school at Burke on the very west side of Compton to start off. And gradually, because I was a very inquisitive guy, I mean, not because of my own doing, but because I moved from there to the Grandy's in a middle part of Compton after about 10 years. And I moved from the Birch area to the Longfellow area. And then again, as Ernest said, I met Ernest and quite a few of my longtime friends at Longfellow, brothers that I still see today, very fond of. And then the junior high school years, I went to school with, I met Joe over at Walton. And again, another lifelong friend. I was there for only a year at Walton, but I met a host of people, and we were all a member of the same, the same neighborhood. Even though I had moved to another neighborhood, I just felt like, hey, it just grew bigger. And everywhere any of us went, our neighborhood just got bigger. And so I moved from the Grandy's after 3 years. We moved over across near Wilson Park, which was across Alameda, kind of one of those boundaries. And life took a kind of a different turn because eighth, ninth grade, I happened to be at a party at some other friend's house that lived further across Long Beach Boulevard. And we were coming home a little late, and we got accosted by the Caucasian crowd, and almost took a pretty good beating, but save last minute ingenuity, we got out of that one too. Being as that my one buddy that was with me was a trackster, and I had to keep up with him, so that got us out of that. So the next few years were actually years of trying to get across Long Beach Boulevard and live peaceably like we do throughout the rest of the city. And eventually it came, but it took a couple of years for everybody to melt a little bit more together than to have rage against each other. And it didn't really just end, they moved away. My thing, I played sports in Compton and I played with and against some of my brothers. being that we were at different schools, but my major was theater arts. So and my reason being that my family has a history in Hollywood dating back to 1925 and 30s with Shirley Temple and in major pictures like King Kong. So that was my goal, kind of put in my head by the family that you want to be an actor. So I was a theater arts major all the way through to junior at the junior college. And I was actor of the year when I graduated at Dominguez High School in 71. So those are my accolades. And other than that, my thing is to know and be a person that other people can depend on to be of some assistance where I'm available. So that's pretty much my makeup. Mm-hmm. So I'll throw it back at you, Ernie.
Am I back? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. But I wasn't able to. I got knocked out, so I don't know where you left off at, Marlon.
Oh, okay. Well, I just finished up at my situation at Compton College, where again I majored in theater arts. Done some local community plays here for some of our churches. As a matter of fact, I did some work for Sister Judy, who just received her director's awards here recently. And I've done a couple of plays with her here in the community. And some other speaking engagements that were more performances, but a lot in that field.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ernest. Now I know I had spoke with you before, and I think I didn't give you a chance to finish, kind of introducing yourself and things you have done. So you play college basketball, right?
Right.
Okay, so you could tell us about that if you don't mind.
Okay, let me start off by saying, you know, most of the guys that grew up in Compton and played any kind of sport, you know, you went through a little trial and error thing, you know, and when I first started playing at Compton High, it was summertime. And at that time, I was a little young guy, and I wasn't allowed to play on the big court because you had Dwight Taylor, you had Larry Hollyfield, you had Bobby Watkins. You had all these superstars, big guys, older. They were much older than me at the time. So whenever, you know, they would play, and when there was a timeout or something, we'd roll out there and shoot the ball. But I had to work my way up to the point where I could get on the court with those guys. And once I was able to get on the court with those guys, I felt like I was doing something. Okay, so once you get the respect of the guys that came before you, it changes your whole outlook on how things are done around Compton. And after that, I left Compton. I went over to Compton College and playing for Coach Newman just changed everything around. You know, he was a special kind of guy and a great coach. But you know, I went over there my first year. I didn't make the team, you know, so Coach Newman had told me to just sit out that year and try again next year. So I did that, and I played during the summer, and I ended up making the team and starting for Coach Newman, you know, so, we did pretty well in 72. That was 1972, and we ended up winning the state championship, a lot of those guys, they were all sophomores, and I was a redshirt freshman. So I was coming. I had to come back the next year and play one more year at Compton, and that was ended up being an All-American at Compton College for 2 years there. And after Compton College, I got a scholarship to West Virginia University. A kid from Compton going to West Virginia University. I grew up in Compton watching Jerry West play. You know, and we all watched Jerry West and the Lakers, Elgin Baylor and Will Chamberlain, those guys. Never dreamed I would go and play at West Virginia University. So ended up leaving Compton. And I'm gonna tell you something. When I got to West Virginia University, growing up in Compton, the only white people I knew was school teachers and police. I got there, it was 400 black students on campus and 21,000 white students. So it took a little time for me to adjust. because I sat in a classroom. The classes were pretty large classes, you know, 60 people in a class, and I was the only black student in the class. And it took a little while, but I did graduate. But I had a good, pretty good career there. I started both years, and I had a few good experiences. I got a chance to play at Madison Square Garden. We played against Rutgers in 76 at Madison Square Garden. And I played against Notre Dame at South Bend. And Chick Hearn did the play-by-play. And my son, every time I tell somebody that, my son rolls his eyes because I'm proud of that moment. Because everybody didn't get a chance to play. Everybody didn't get a chance to play with Chick Hearn doing the play-by-play on national TV. Okay, it was on national TV. And the night before that game, I had called all my family. I had called everybody in California. The game was going to be on national TV the next day. So, you know, that was great for me. But my mother and father got the chance to see me play.
Amen.
And that was good. What else? Mm-hmm. After I finished up at, well, let me tell you this before I go any further. At West Virginia University, when I finished there, they had a website, and they put the first 25 black full scholarship basketball players on a website, and we were labeled pioneers of basketball, West Virginia University basketball. So I was a pioneer. They hadn't had very many black players at that school until we came. So it was a good experience, but I went through a few changes. I had to learn a few things while I was there. You know, I had to make all the adjustments. You know, none of the white guys made any adjustments. You know, they didn't have to. I had to make all the adjustments. But I still go back like every other year for the alumni game. And the coach at West Virginia right now is Bobby Huggins. And he was the two guard when I played there. He played with me. I was the point guard. He was the two guard. So he's still coaching. And he will go into the Hall of Fame. He's like got over 800 wins. But I do go back every now and then. So. And then after I left West Virginia University, I did graduate. I came back and I taught 1 year at Compton College. I was assistant basketball coach. And then that was a good experience for me, you know. So and then after that, I got a travel bug. I took it. I didn't want to be in Compton no more, so I took a job with the airlines. And I worked as an airline flight attendant for 18 years, traveling all around the world. That was the greatest. That was unbelievable for me. So I did enjoy
all
that.
All right. I want to go around the horn right now to see if anybody have any questions or before you guys get started with coming from the 50s to the 60s, the 70s and all of that. I want to see if anybody have any questions so far. So I'm going to start with Brother Doctor. Brother Doctor, any questions for Marlon or Ernest?
No, not right now.
Okay. Brother Mashenda?
No, not at the moment. Thank you.
Okay, Brother Hembrick.
I don't have questions. I just got some comments.
You got some comments for us? Go ahead.
I came to Compton in 65. I was coming from what Ernest was 65 when he was at West Virginia, like only black in the class. And I remember riding down Central at the cemetery on the back of the truck with the furniture. And I had never seen so many black people in my life. So it was kind of what they experienced. And I know I was to tell you when I first came to town, I was like a little white boy. And I had to learn quick, learn how to fight with people. So, although, we did have some fights in the project we came from. I was a little studious type before a big studious type guy back then. I kind of adapted pretty quick, playing at West Park, little league team that almost went to waiver for it. About nine of those drafted.
Joe?
Yeah.
Joe? I don't mean to intervene, but what team were you on with the at West Park?
I was on the Orioles, but I'm on the All-Star team.
Okay. All right. Yeah, we must have played the same year. I was on the Stars.
I remember the.
That was the minor league.
Oh, okay. I don't remember.
Little boys.
Calvin Moore was the pitcher. Calvin's been on the show. Kenny Lamb.
Yeah, I remember.
The center field. Gary Ward was on the left. George Polk was at second. That's Ernest Rodoff. Short Richard Davis was at third, and I was on first. And so we put all of the teams down here. We was in the Clippers and all that.
All right.
Distinctly, when we went to San Diego to play, after we came around here and we showed up down there, in those days, the host team would have to take you into their home, you know, for the game if you traveled to the game. Once they saw us, we walked out. Hell no.
Yeah.
They didn't want to let us stay in the home. So our coach, Coach Davis, Coach Winston, they had to call Williamsport and report that to the Little League Association. And later on that night, the people finally let us stay at home. And I think Calvin pitched a no hitter the next day. We really didn't play down there. We played down there for 2 days. But anyway, I just wanted to say I had a different kind of experience coming to Compton. Kind of just the opposite. A lot of things going on. Somebody else probably got it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, let me say this. Marlon and Ernest.
Yeah.
When you're not talking, can you please just mute your, are you able to mute your phone whenever you're not talking? Because we have a lot of feedback coming in.
Okay.
So if whenever you're not talking, see if you can mute your phone. But I mean, you know, we're going to roll with what we're going to roll with regardless.
What we got.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We'll do it again, you know? So, okay. So good. So Marlon and Ernest, you guys want to go ahead and begin your, well, we got to have Professor Rod now. Professor Rod, you got any questions? You're muted.
I would ask Machinda, I yield to Machinda, then I'll go.
I went to Machinda. He said he didn't have anything.
Okay. First of all, I want to welcome y'all to the program, and it's good to hear y'all voices. I think Marlon, I think you went to school with my brother, Curtis Montgomery.
I did, yeah, brother. Yeah. Yes, you did. Yeah. Solid brother.
Sister Andrea Montgomery. And
Know him well. Knew him well.
Yeah, right. And,
praise God.
Yeah. And then, you know, the issue, you know, y'all are, I'm still living in Compton. Not that I'm still, I mean, I don't know where else to go, you know, growing up here. But there's a lot of issues because middle school was rough in the 70s, especially getting up to 79. But before that, even 71, I think of Ernest, you went to school with my wife. She graduated from Compton High in 71. But I think Wade was the principal.
Yes, he was.
And over at Dominguez, Mr. Workman was the football coach. And I forget who the principals were. I know the brother was the vice principal. I can't remember.
Banks.
Waldo. I know him well.
Yeah.
So I had to go up there and see about my brothers and stuff. My issue is that, you know, there was a lot of discipline problems coming through, and for y'all to navigate your way through, you know, and at that time gangs were very fluent. You know, how did you navigate that situation? Whereas you weren't a victim or you weren't a perpetrator of violence or you weren't, you know, subject to the problems. Sports keep you out of it, your parents or what? And second, you know, there was an influx during that period of Latinos. Yeah, because Dominguez changed immensely. And you know, it's on the border of Paramount, and really was built for white folks, and then Latinos came, and then blacks. But through busing, most of the people that was going to Dominguez, a lot of them were bused. If I'm not mistaken, rescue me if I'm wrong, Marvin.
No, you're right. As a matter of fact, they changed the borders that year that we came to Dominguez, that a lot of the Centennial people would have to come to Dominguez. They changed it that year, 71.
Yeah, yeah. And so how was the culture? How was the culture shock, you know, as far as being on a bus? What was all that about, if you don't mind sharing?
It's a good thing that you asked. In 71, I was asked to speak at a meeting of a group of about maybe 15 students and a photographer, a stenographer, a filmographer, Dr. Oliver Miller, who had been my teacher in the sixth grade when I was at Longfellow. But he was doing work with the I hear that feedback myself now. Is that me? Are you guys hearing that feedback?
That's Ernest.
I don't hear anything.
It was coming back to me, but now it's not. So anyway, so they were doing a survey at our school specifically because it was one-third black, one-third white, one-third Latino. It was evenly balanced at 71. And they were wondering how we were all getting along so well. There weren't any fights. There were no gang problems at Dominguez in 71. And the answer was because we weren't divided by color, by different demographic things other than our color. If you hung around with somebody that when they got out of school, they went and hung around in the neighborhood until they had to be home at 9 o'clock, then that's who you hung with. And they may be black or white or Hispanic. But if they're in your neighborhood and they're out and able to do what you do, they're cool with you. Or if you did your homework, and I used an example, and I won't use a name, but there was an Asian guy and a black guy who hung very close together. They were, and I said, they're friends. The black guy would never hang around with me and my friends because we didn't go home and do our homework right away. We weren't A students. So, but now a white guy that did the things that I did when I got out of school, me and him were cool. Or me and a Mexican guy did the same thing. We were cool. So there was no color division. It was what you did. So everybody got along swimmingly. And they did a survey on that particular thing there that year.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so
but you know, at the same time, you know, I remember distinctly that there was a lot of discipline problems on the high schools at that time. I mean, it began to emerge. Things began to change. When you hit the 70s. And you know, like, you know, Newman was a disciplinarian as well as a coach. Because he came up at Mona Park as a recreation leader. Then he went to Willowbrook before he went to Compton High and eventually Compton College. You know, I was on his first championship team at Mona Park. You know, but I know that my point is that the campuses were very disruptive. For y'all to get out with the grades and the college win scholarships was very unique. And I just want to know, did you see, you know, the challenges at that early age to keep you from being a part of the madness, if there was madness? Where you sound, there was no madness. You know, it was just smooth sailing.
Well, you know, at Compton, the gangs weren't in Compton. I graduated in 71. There was no gangs in Compton at that time. The gangs came in 72.
In 72.
See, there was no gangs. Yeah. The gangs were still in L.A. They were still in L.A. And we had Airway as the principal. And believe me, it was discipline. on campus. You didn't have nobody hanging around outside the school campus. It wasn't a whole lot of fights.
And I just want to say, and it was so crisp and distinct between the end of 71, where there was no problem at all, to the first day of school in 72, somebody got killed at Dominguez, and we didn't even have guns. And I say that from the position you're asking, how did we maneuver through? I'll tell you, Ernest and I were talking about it earlier. Myself, I study people coming up just out of natural curiosity. I mean, I studied kids my age as I was coming up. I studied adults as I was coming up. And one of the things I did as protection is I stuck my chest out and I acted badder than I was. So nobody wanted to try me. Therefore, I could cover some of the people that couldn't cover themselves and keep them out of trouble too, because people didn't want to try me. But I was just as full of bluff or guff as anybody else, except I might have to go through with something, and in those cases I would. But I'm just saying, my main thing was to keep the wolves away from my door, and it worked pretty well because I didn't have much problems. And people might have thought that I was a problem, but Ernest will tell you, I'm good a guy as anybody else. It's just I have a way of keeping people from testing me. And, you know, people around. I mean, your friends
are pretty good at it. And you're pretty good at it, too. You know, but Ron, it was just what, it wasn't a whole lot going on in Compton back then. That was during our days there. Marlon, like I said, we met in the fifth grade, and, like you said, it was just one of them kind of, like the TV shows, you know, with a whole lot of gangster stuff going on. You know, it was just a lot of sports, and everybody wanted to play sports. Everybody wanted to play baseball at West Park. You know,
You know what? You know, as a matter of fact, on that point, I'm sorry to interrupt, Ernest, but we were such friendly guys for real. Compton and Dominguez had a fight at Veterans Stadium, the football teams on the field. Now, I wasn't playing football, I was in the stands. But I was able to go out on the field between these two, Compton and Dominguez, because both of these are my friends and I could calm some of them down. It was real heated. As a matter of fact, they were still heated supposedly Monday morning when the Dominguez crowd wanted to go up to Compton. I mean, the brothers that wanted to do that. And of course, I was with them, because at Compton was my friends too, and I knew these guys are going up here to see some of their friends, but they're angry. If something break out, somebody's going to get hurt. But same as on the field, I was there too. And
okay, Marlon.
You don't want to hurt him.
Excuse me, Marlon. Was that the fall of 1970 when Dominguez and Compton played?
It was one. Now, what score was? Because
I'm saying that you graduated in 71, correct?
Right.
Yeah. Did that football game occur in the fall of 1970?
That one occurred in the fall of 71, wouldn't it?
No, I'm saying if you graduated in 71, it was the spring.
That's correct. You're right.
Okay.
You're right.
I just wanted to make sure we knew when that altercation actually happened.
Right. It was the fall of 70. You're right.
Okay. Now, I wanted to add to what both of you were talking about and the question that Rob was alluding to. And so, according to Ernest, in 71, when you guys graduated, the gangbanging haven't began yet. So
okay, so now
let me say this. My brother graduated in 73. So the fall of 72, as a little kid, I was about 9 years old. We went to a football game at Compton High, and my brother had to maneuver us through gang banging situations. So it had hit in 72, I think you guys mentioned that. And it was like, you know, the gangbanging was starting to come in pretty heavy.
Well, we could tell you when it came, because in 72, the Crips were what's called the schools, different schools. They would not call the school, but they would let you know, we're going to be at Centennial this Friday. We're going to be at Dominguez. Are we going to be at Compton? When they said they were going to be at Compton that Friday, I think everybody ran to different hideouts. They had bricks, baseball bats, everything you could think of waiting on them to come. And when they came, it was a heck of a fight. It was a heck of a fight, but some of the Crips left their cars behind. As I recall, bricks thrown through their windows. I mean, it was really bad for them. So Compton was there. Back then, you wouldn't be able to tell Compton that you're going to come and beat us up at that time. I wasn't there, of course. I was over at Compton College, but I had so many friends that were there, and I knew they were coming that day, but I had class at Compton College, and I had no business over at Compton High anyway. But that's how it went down. So
wow.
And a lot of the guys that were there that day still talk about it. You know, but after that, though, the Compton became Crips. You know, you had the Crips all over the place in Compton. So what was it? What's a Nutty Block and all these other the Food Town, different neighborhoods started naming themselves. But we didn't go through that through high school. We didn't go
we
through
did
that.
We did not have that.
No.
Okay, matter of fact, Professor Ra.
Uh-huh.
Professor Ra, you're muted.
Okay. Am I off mute now?
Yes.
You know, it's not. First of all, I want to commend y'all on being successful young men and fathers and stuff like that, because we need that.
Amen.
We need brothers that Amen. Have the street experience as well as the education that help other young brothers show them the way and show, you know, they follow in your footsteps, your kids and your cousins and your nephews and the extended family that you become images of. But, you know,
we owe you some thanks, brother. We owe you some thanks for that, Brother Sleep.
You must be kind. But let me tell you, you know, the pubs, we used to have Woodworth, Pub Taco, all down Compton Boulevard where the theater was, Sad Sacks, Exum's Dressing and all of that. But they had gangs. But they weren't as they didn't get the notoriety as Crips and Bloods. You had the Swamps, you had the Lazy Loafers, yeah. Latinos had car gangs, you know, they were driving Chevys and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Like you said, on the way home, the Spook Hunters, white people, gangs. So there were gangs. They just didn't have the street black notoriety that the Crips and the Blood got. But getting back away right. from that, how was your parental development? I mean, the role your mothers and fathers played in your life as far as, instrumenting, how much of your life was your parents in your life? And did you have both parents?
Well, Rob, I did have both parents. My mother and father married and stayed married till death did them apart, that... On the street I grew up on, I think everybody on the street had a mother and father. The parents had a block club. You know, I mean, it was a bunch of kids on my street where we didn't have to go on other streets to play. We had enough people on our street. And I don't know if you know Ralph Davis, the Davises, Ralph Davis, Derek Davis.
I just played golf with Ralph the other day.
You played with Ralph? Okay. Well, Ralph taught me how to play basketball. I used to play basketball in Ralph's backyard. Okay. And then right at the corner, we had Michael Owens. And I know you might know Mike as well.
I went to Long Beach City and I was at his home going.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah,
and I knew Mike well, and his brother William, and see, we had guys that played baseball at Compton in the early '60s, and you know that's why sports was big on my street, and my father, he kicked the boys out the house. Okay, he didn't want us in the house. After we finished cutting the grass, we would leave and we're gone all day. My sister, she had to stay home, but my father didn't like the boys hanging around the house. But he was very disciplined. You know, we couldn't come, we didn't do things we weren't supposed to do because it was his house. Right? so, and he never, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but he never gave us a key. You know, we always left one door open. And that's the door we came in and out of, because he could always hear us coming in and out. So you know, it was interesting growing up in, on our street. You know, the parents and all the parents knew each other. And if we did something, believe me, my father found out. All right, they would tell. And every now and then most of the parents on the street, the fathers were drinking buddies. You know, so they didn't take it too far. They didn't let us see them get crazy or nothing like that. But you know, it was a different street to grow up on. It was fun.
Ernest, can I add to that?
Sure.
Okay. We also had a block club. And guess who we played like at a we the block clubs organized, you know, softball.
Uh-huh.
And we played against your street. He had Gary Davis.
I'm sure he did. Yeah.
You had the Watsons.
The Watsons. Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought they was cheating because I didn't know they grew up on the same street.
Right across the street from me.
They were so dominant. They whooped our butts. You know. And I was like, man, these block clubs are cheating. But they actually stayed on the same street. That was funny.
Well, okay. Let me add to that too. You know, in the 60s, our older brothers played baseball. You know, a couple of the guys played varsity baseball at Compton. And they were always playing other streets in football, playing other streets in baseball. And when they all left, some of them left and went to Vietnam. And some of them took jobs and moved away. We stepped up and we did that. And then after I left, my group left, Gary Davis still came along, see. And it was a generational thing from the 60s to the 70s, all right. And you know how successful Gary Davis was in basketball. You know, he thinks he was the best one that came off of Broadacres, but he has to get in a little line.
Well, you know, he was my teammate, him and Kevin Burrell.
Is that right? Yeah. but we had Purvis Miller. Remember Purvis?
Yes.
Well, the Purvis grew up. It was on that lived on the street as well, along with the Watsons, and then we had the Davises. And then we had the Wards, and we had some basketball, some athletes on our street. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of fun and a lot of competition.
You know, the thing that made Compton such a for us a breadbasket of pride, fun, and challenge was that there were athletes all through the neighborhood, and most of us. The good thing was that we went to school somewhere along the way. So that we didn't really become the bitter rivals that we could have. We're still friends. Because like I mentioned, the fact that we came up to Compton and were supposed to come up there and fight, went up there and shook hands with everybody and had a good day, had a sandwich together, and we went back to our school and everybody was still friends like they were when they were little. Mm-hmm. You know?
Excellent.
You know, and that is to say, and again, Ernest and I were talking about that. As a kid, I always envisioned the city of Compton coming up to be even more of the powerhouse that it had begun to be, you know, because it had room to get stronger, but it got killed in 72. The dynamic of things changed in 72 because I got by. And I got by lollygagging. I'm telling you that I got by lollygagging and got a good enough education to be able to get through every test with the state or the city or government, because I've worked for them all. And it takes something to get in. And worked for the school district in Los Alamitos, retired from there after 22 years. But what I'm saying is that even lollygagging through, it was fun, and I mean, getting the grades to still pass, you know, still making it without going actually. Uh-oh, somebody.
Okay. So now I want to that when we spoke. And this is with Ernest. Mm-hmm. Ernest, you were saying that you wanted to give an analysis of the 50s, 60s, 70s, and up into now, like a transformation. Okay. So can you kind of like briefly do that, and then Marlon could assist with that?
Take over. Okay. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. I mean, growing up in Compton, and I'm sure you guys know this, you had all those swamps. And I grew up near the swamps. And at a young age, you know, again, following my brothers, you know, riding a bike, going out through the swamps and hanging out in the swamps, and over off of Alondra, where the beef house was. And back in those days, when Campanella Park was, go to Campanella Park, and across the street from Campanella Park, it was a dairy farm, and you could see all these cows. And I'm a little bitty little guy. I probably was about 5 or 6. My brother took me over there, and I'm looking at, seemed like to me at that age, 1,000 cows. And Compton was like that. If you wanted some milk or something like that, the dairy delivered the milk. You know, you wanted a donut, we had the Hell's Donut truck. You know, those are the kind of things that are no longer around. And it was special during that time. We rode our bikes everywhere. All right. So and then as when I got to started school at Caldwell, you know, in kindergarten, I still have some of those same friends today from kindergarten. And we talk about how if we finished school in kindergarten, we walked home. It wasn't no, my parents didn't come and get us. You know, we walked home and the next year when my sister started, she was a year behind me. You know, when I was in the first grade, I had to wait on her, or she had to wait on me, and we just held hands and walked down Caldwell and had to stay at home until our parents got off of work. And we were told to go in the backyard and stay in the backyard or in the house. And we listened to what they said. It was hell to pay if we got caught in the front yard. So those kind of things weighed on me growing up. And when I had my son, I didn't do him that same way because it was a different time. But as time went by, you know, it sort of kept me out of trouble. I was never a fighter or anything like that. I just, you know, just went along with the program. But if somebody was doing something that I didn't think was cool, I'd disappear them because I wasn't stealing nothing. You know, I wasn't gonna be having to get in no fights and nothing like that. Not that I was scared or anything, but I just. It just wasn't me, you know. So, and moving forward, getting over to Walton, and like Ross said, they did have games, but those games were, I don't know. Yeah. We had a game at Walton called the Nicotines. Okay, now this game, only way you could get in the game is if you smoked a cigarette. Okay, all right. So that's what they called the Nicotines. And Marty, you know a bunch of those guys that was in the Nicotines, right?
Oh yeah.
So, but they were just cool. They didn't fight anybody. They were just smoking cigarettes. But you know, as far as gangs, you know, I couldn't relate to any of those guys that I knew were in gangs, to the Crips or the Bloods or anything like that. But they did have the Swamp Boy back in the '50s. So that they were pretty tough. What my brothers tell me, you know. So,
Ernest, I just correct you on the nicotine. They did have a fight with the Bobcats. I was in the Bobcats.
Oh. Okay, yeah, with the Bobcats. Okay. You'd have to be there to know that one, right?
Attack.
Yeah, that's you know about the nicotines?
Yeah, I know about the nicotines.
Hey, look. Yeah. Now I had an incident with those nicotines, too. You know, let's see, we played when I was at Roosevelt. It was a year after I left Walton. I'm at Roosevelt. And we played Walton in baseball. And Walton won, I think it was 2-1. And somebody rocked the bus when they left. Somebody threw rocks at the bus. And the word, just because my name is always floating, my name got caught up in it. And
always,
I was going
always.
Yeah, and I'm going to church over at Double Rock, over at Mr. Holmes, Reverend Holmes Church, and I'm in there, I'm in the choir. So we're practicing on like a Tuesday night, and nobody's out in the vestibule or sitting in the pews. But then in walks about three guys from Walton, and I know them, you know, brothers I know I went to school with, but I know they're nicotine. I know the bus got rocked and they're supposed to be getting retribution for it. And here I'm the only one here. three walk in, then another two, and they came in until it was about maybe 10. I said, I'm done. But I just said, well, I'm going to go outside before choir rehearsal is over so that if we're going to get it on, I'm going to get it on out of sight. And I walked outside, and two of the brothers came outside. I said, you brothers here to see me? And they said, oh, no. Oh, no. I said, oh, well, I thought we had a problem. How's these brothers doing? and had to walk from there back over to Wilson Park. So, you know, I mean, wouldn't have been a running thing because that's way too far. But I'm just saying we weren't that type of fighters because if they were after somebody from Roosevelt, they had somebody dead bang. But we weren't really that type of people. We were seventh, eighth graders. I mean, eighth graders. But we weren't that kind because they could have beat me up right there. Or we could have fought. But we really weren't that kind. We were kinder than that, I'm saying.
They attacked us, the Bobcats, and all the Bobcats.
So who was in the Bobcats? Who was in the Bobcats that could fight?
Right. Can I ask you one more quick question? How did you, I know what culture was there, because I lived it, but how did you get away from the drug set, the drinking set? I mean, you know, a lot of the, that was Florida. Red Devils were everywhere. Yeah. You know, I mean, what kind of discipline? I'm trying to see, most people fall through the cracks coming up. We have lost a lot of friends. I'm trying to find the formula. That I know that the parental guidance and support was there. And I know, but you know, it seems as if y'all had some discipline, unique discipline, not, I don't know if you partaked in it and then got out of it or if you never experienced it, you know, being athletes, you know, help me some, you know, because.
Well, let me tell you this.
Okay.
Let me tell you this. You know, drinking was never my thing, you know, but. So we would buy a bottle, I'll give it four or five of us to get together. Everybody put a little change in and get for a dollar and get some Strawberry Hill or some Bull's Farm. Okay? And we drink that, but it just never done nothing for me. I never cared for much for smoking or drinking. You know, and most of the guys that I hung around with were just like me. They didn't smoke or drink either. And sports kept us out of a lot of trouble. You know, because we knew that we couldn't drink and go play basketball. We couldn't drink and go play baseball. We couldn't, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of people smoking weed back then that I knew. And on my street, it just wasn't smoking weed and smoking cigarettes and drinking just didn't play well. It our parents did. You know, they drank, you know, every weekend. And now that gave us the opportunity to go do what we wanted to do. So it wasn't a lot of, we just didn't do a lot of drinking. So it was sports that kept it out, kept us away from it.
You're asking the wrong brother, Ross.
Oh, we.
No, I didn't drink. I didn't care for drinking or smoking.
We cigarettes, fought, I did all that. But Ernest,
yeah, I know.
Ernest and Marlon was kind of good guys.
I'm glad you brothers think so. I'm gonna tell you now. My story is much different from yours, Ernest, and probably everybody's. If you just say that your parents were together, because that's a very big hole to swallow if you were a kid. And I really didn't recognize it. I went along with it. But looking back, my story is very different because when you talk about even drugs, I was all into that, tripped and fumbled and stumbled over every brick in the road, but straightened up, you know, after enough hickeys, you know, on my head, just straightened up, because I wasn't numb to the drugs. I knew all about it. I sold singles when I was in the sixth grade, in the Grandies. So I knew all about it and all the nuances and the falling short. By the time I got to junior high school, I really didn't want to be nowhere in that game, but it was the only thing otherwise going on. It was the fun. It was the fun. It wasn't the even the hustle. I never could sell drugs. You know. So what I'm saying is, I was in it just for the fun and the camaraderie of everything that went along in it. And I, you know, when it was time to get out for sure, I backed away. You know, but everybody, now that takes something if you've gone through something, you know. Because actually, since I was probably about 15, I'll tell you what my mother told me. She said, you can go to school and you can eat here and sleep here, no problem. You quit going to school, you either go to work or you get out of here. I was in eighth, ninth grade. So, you know, I could have dropped out at any time. But I liked school, and I was good at it. I mean, it wasn't like I was going to flunk out, you know. But I flirted with it at every opportunity and gave them every opportunity to get with me. But that was a game that I played with them, trying to graduate on time and have my fun at this social media place called school. That's what I treated it as. I'm just telling you, I was, you know, on a different page. I wasn't going for education. I'll do this for you, for me to be able to keep coming here and keep graduating. You know, okay. But it's a fun place for me. So I didn't do the right thing.
Okay, I wanted to go to Brother Doctor, see if he want to chime in on a question or a comment. Brother Doctor?
No, just little comments. You know, it sounds something like our story, Rotsky. You know, okay. A little, you know, I met you in the fourth grade?
Fourth grade, yep.
Was it 75? About 75, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I went to Compton, Dominguez. Where we go? Davis, Dickerson.
Davis, yep. Dickerson,
went to
Davis.
Lincoln. When I was at Lincoln until they closed it down, then they, you know, we all had to go to Dickerson. But I heard Ron mix some stuff. I want to know if anybody remember Country Farms. I remember being a little kid, man, and caught on fire. Country Farms. We were right down the street. We were right
down Country Farms. Country Farms. Yeah.
Yeah, sure Country do. Farms, I remember that burning down. I remember jumping in the car, my parents, we rushing over to Rosecrans and watching these people burn up in their car.
Mm. That was the match that was going to Compton was going to play Centennial. Mm. Right?
Yeah, the Chicken Shack and like you said, Pup and Taco and all of those stuff, man. Yeah,
Boys Market.
Yeah, man.
Boys Market, Boys Market, and Thrifties.
Yeah.
Man, you talking about that Rosecrans Plaza?
No, Thrifties? They were off of Tejada.
Oh, okay.
It was the Boys Market off of Tejada.
It was okay. Tamron. Yeah.
On Tamron. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And a Thrifty, yeah.
Well, you know, at the Rosecrans Plaza, they had a Thrifties in there, along with Holly's Barbecue, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I bought my first baseball glove at that Thrifties. I never forgot. Kept that glove for 20 years. Until it fell apart. You know?
Okay, Thrifties. Brother, let's get Brother Mashinda in here. Brother Mashinda, because we all, every last one of us grew up in Compton here.
That's right.
Brother Mashinda, are you there? He could have stepped away. Okay, Brother Hembrick.
Yeah. You know, getting back to that, anyway, growing up in Compton, the memories I have because of where I came from, all in white folks, the 60s movement was going on at the time. So I kind of gravitated to that heavily. I was a Panther one month, a Muslim the next month, and Christian Leadership Conference the next month. Anything black, I was down with it because of where I had come from, down in Harbor City. So I remember I was fascinated, and this would really impress me when I was going to Walton when Muhammad Ali was refusing to go into the military, and he said, ain't no Viet Cong ever called me.
There you go. There it is, bold statement.
Yeah, but remember, you know, because Wade played, you know, the Black National Anthem every day before school and all of that. And, you know, the school was turned from the white staff to the Black staff. So we got a little bit of history, not a whole lot. But what I experienced was the curriculum in Compton at the time. I was way ahead of it. That's why I had so much time to mess off, because the stuff I had already had like 3-4 years before. I was down there with the white folks.
Unknown caller.
I didn't have to study for a whole lot. That's why I got into all other stuff, the drugs and the hanging out and the partying. And like Marlon said, Compton High, no party. anyway, I consider myself a survivor, you know, by getting out of the drug thing and all that with some cats I was hanging out with. That's all they did. And they the only ones that had a car at the time, so I'm catching rides. But what got me out of it, as soon as I graduated from Compton, I went to Southwest. Instead of going to Compton College, I went to Southwest College, and I cut them cats loose. And them just followed me over there, but I focused on ball and just try to get a new crowd, because I dropped my last thumb on grad night at Compton High. Graduated. I saw.
Did you went to Disneyland too, Joe? Huh? Did you go to Disneyland?
Yeah, I was there. I was there, drunk as I'm.
Grad night.
Hey, no wonder we didn't see each other.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
See, what I remember, because I moved into Compton around 62. It may have been 60, 61. Because in those days, they were junior highs. They weren't middle schools. And you had A and B. B7, A7, and all of that.
Not in Compton.
Yeah, they didn't have done.
They had it when I was in school, 62.
Not in Compton.
At the ministry, at Ralph Bunch, brother, I was in it. You understand? Then they got rid of it. You understand? Let me finish. Okay, I know about Watts. They did have it in Watts. But when I first came to Compton, I went to Bunch Junior High in 1962 or 61, late 61. Because I was in the seventh grade. I was in the B7. Then A7, then I think they got rid of it. Okay, then. As far as I'm concerned, because see, you got to remember, Compton unified. Compton didn't become unified until it had to be a little bit later than in the early 70s or something, 68, 69. It, because Enterprise had its elementary school, Willowbrook had its elementary school, then they came to unify. But that was in the going up to the 50s and the 60s. In the 60s, the issue was because, you know, we had playgrounds in the summer. We had decathlons. The schools competed against each other in the summer. Mm-hmm. You had the Cressy Park dance that, we had coming up in the 60s. Most of East Compton was white across mm-hmm. Alameda, most at that time during the early 60s. Then, as Joe said, the 65 came with the Watts Rebellion. And they had a lot because they had the Brown Berets on Rosecrans and Willowbrook, which was the Latinos' image of the Black Panthers. And then you had the Compton-Willowbrook Enterprise Community Action Agency. And you had Teen Post. And you had NYC, Neighborhood Roots Corps. Yeah.
Well, can I ask a question? I'm sorry to cut you off. What year did the NYC program start?
I know I was doing it in 63, 62, something like that.
Okay.
Because I worked, I washed dishes for money in high school, NYC. And that was in 63. I went to a centennial. And, you know, and that, because we had what they call community action agencies and anti-poverty programs coming up. And that created a black middle income, not middle class, because in order to have a middle class, you have to have an upper class, and all we had was a bottom and a middle. So you know that's the difference. But anyway, you had the Compton, you had Team Post, you had, and then and the curriculum in the schools, you had wood shop, metal shop, Mr. Hill, Mr. Donaldson, and all of them, you know, at the where he was at Whaley, me and Donaldson was at Whaley in 78, 79. We were both teachers. But going back to the point is that things changed. The schools have changed since we attended them. Even the nostalgia that y'all are talking about, it's not the same. There's no wood shop, no metal shop, Compton Rams Art Stadium used to be the spot to go to see not only football but track. They had the Compton Relays in the 60s.
We're trying to reinvigorate the Compton Cup. Reverend Charles Brown and the 125. Compton Historical Society. This summer we held a little proxy meet over at Walton for, you know, anybody that wanted to run. And we got quite a few kids over there that came and participated that day. We let them know all week they could come and train with us. A few guys came over and coached, Larry Kirk and Daryl Smith from Dominguez. Coach Brown from Compton High School. We trained a few kids for about a week, and then we let them have a competition against each other in about 10 little events. And we're trying to get in position to reinvigorate the Compton Cup, which used to be the biggest track meet on the West Coast. As a matter of fact, history says that back in the early 40s, 50s, they used to come from the East Coast all the way to Compton College because it was they won the Junior Rose Bowl about three times, and that included the whole country. They were the renowned junior college to go to, like UCLA or Oxford. Compton used to be the JC to go to. And so we're trying to reinvigorate the Compton Cup because that was one of the biggest draws, you know. So by 2022 or 23, we're hoping to be in full regalia with the in time for the stadium opening up. And that's, you know, just getting the community back involved in where they used to be back in the 60s. Because
they've closed down Compton High, and almost all the elementary schools are 70 to 80% Latino. Most of the track and football fields are now soccer fields. You have an influx of most black people are the seniors, like myself. You have a homeless problem, you know. It's a lot of issues. I'm just saying that the transition of the Compton community, it was only a short time that it was predominantly black, you know.
See, all of this is to allude to something happened in the early 60s where there was a salt put in the game so that it would have us moving out. Opening up, as you notice, large plots of Compton right here in between the Port of Long Beach and downtown LA are being bought up because it is the hub. So all that they can get cleared out by hook or crook, you know, by running you out because you're black, or you running out because you can't deal with what's going on here? Because I live in Compton too. I moved back to Compton in the last 6 years because this is what I'm used to. Of course, being a youngster, my dream ideal would have been for most of the people that you have known to have kept their properties and, you know, the neighborhood grow the way we had it growing. But they salted our neighborhood so that it could be had, which if you look around and see who's buying up this big property, it's a lot of these industries with a lot of money, because they're going to put probably not even residential in this area. They're chewing up as much big area as they can. And it's, you know, it's redeveloping the whole thing. They're tearing down what developed in Compton for us. And they have ways and means of clearing it out, you know, by even just being hard on you.
Yes.
Now, I wanted to see if Brother Mashinda wanted to chime in, because he grew up on my street and he's a little bit older than me. So he has some insight on Compton. You know, his father ran for councilman in Compton. But Brother Mashinda, are you there? Because I tried to call you earlier. I guess Brother Mashinda he might be snoozing. So, okay. Well, what I want to do, there's a lot to discuss about Compton. And what I want to do is I want to do a part two, if Marlon and Ernest is willing to do that.
Oh, sure. Oh,
definitely. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So definitely. we can get, because we kind of went up into the 70s, maybe 72. We want to kind of get to 72 and beyond that and bring it on home. So it'll be great if we could reschedule for a part two, if you guys don't mind. So we could kind of get the 70s and the 80s in there. Cause see, I'm a part of the 80s crew in the 70s. So,
okay. All right.
That'd be wonderful, because we kind of coming up on about an hour and 15 minutes. And it's a lot to talk about, because I know I really want to get Brother Mashinda's input on some of this, because he's a Comptonite now also. And then I know Hembrick may have more to talk about, Ra. So, and you know, Brother Doctor and I, we're the babies. We came out in 65. So, you know, we started hitting the scene in the mid-70s and 80s, you know? So, it's very interesting and good commentary. I just want to make sure we have enough time to hit these 70s and 80s. And then up until, you know, coming into now.
Okay.
So we want to close out. Do Marlon and Ernest, do you want to close out with something before we leave?
Well, yeah, I just want to say that, again, I always speak on my speculating on how life was. Now, I can only see it through my eyes, and I had a beautiful time coming up Compton. Our beginnings were great, because I think we surprised them by getting here and starting up and doing as well as we were doing. As a matter of fact, I think that's where the salt comes in, that we were doing so well that when the name Compton came up so much in the news and in good standings, that needed to be deterred by some forces. Because I think they had another idea for this particular plot of land. So I think we can probably go into that in the 70s, where it's a little bit more prominent in our next meeting. And I look forward to it. Thank you for having me on.
I appreciate you. Really do. Okay, Ernest?
Yeah, I'm good, man. Marlon hit it on the nail on the head.
Okay, well, I appreciate you, brothers, and I definitely want to extend this.
Russ.
All right.
Yeah, okay, go ahead, brother.
I'm looking forward to this.
Okay, brother Henry.
Is one thing we left out about our early coming up in middle elementary and middle school is everybody used to have pigeons back in the day.
And when did we get those little cups to feed and put water in for the pigeons, Joe?
I just had a little bowl in there. But anyway, the feed store used to be right there on Wilmington and Greenleaf. And it was some white guy who lived right behind the Compton Airport that sold, you know, roller pigeons and stuff. And we get our birds, get on our bikes and have them ride a long way away and let the birds go. And the birds would beat us back home and stuff. I remember that distinctly. Stuff and racing pigeons.
Now, you know, Joe, if you let your pigeons out and they come into over by my house, we could let all my pigeons out there and bring it home. You know that, right? You know how we used to do now. You know?
Yeah. Like all the nuances of pigeon flying.
No, but it's but to add to what Joe said, you know, those cups I was talking about, there used to be a shooting gallery out there off of Artesia before it was 91. And, you know, the white guys go out there shooting at those skeet shooting. And when they missed the cup, they would land out there. We would run out there and get them and take them and back to and put them in our pitching cages.
Mm-hmm.
These kids today don't know nothing about that, of course, because that was a long time ago.
Hey. But when I have trouble with this phone, I have to have a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hopefully next time me and Marlon and I will be able to get on.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, I'm gonna practice.
Yeah, we'll get this right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
We gonna thank you. Thank you, my brother.
All right, thank you. I appreciate everybody. Now on Monday we have Khalid Ra. Is that correct, Professor Ra?
Yeah.
Okay, now if
the
you
Iman.
Got,
Iman Khalid Ra. Iman.
Okay, so now what happened was let me share my screen. When I forward the information to our tech person, she put Abari Ghani Rasaki. So now that's what Ross said in the beginning of the text. So I just forwarded it to her. So the guest is who, Professor Ra?
Khalid, Iman Khalid Ra. He was a captain in the nation, and then he went with Al-Islam. He's going to talk about Islamic phobia in America, you know, with all the and not only that, you know, this, you know, it give a better understanding of Islam and his spiritual perspective of why there's so much phobia by white people, particularly in Congress and things of this nature, going all the way back, you know.
Okay.
Some people sometimes it's hard for them to grasp, you know, they like to study what they want to study. But sometimes you have to open up your minds and learn about various things. And a lot of people don't like Islam and never even don't know the first thing about it. So he's going to talk about Shia law, the difference between the various fractions and why there's so much conflict. He's going to talk about the slave trade, the role Muslims played in the Holocaust of enslavement of African people, and how Islam was imported into Africa. It wasn't a natural religion. But anyway, just
okay. Well, I appreciate that. Looking forward to it. Okay, so next Wednesday on the CEN show, we're gonna have Peter Rogers again, and his topic is a parent's perspective on public education. So we're going to be dealing with that. And so now, Marlon and Ernest, I would like for you to stay on, okay? Because I need to ask you a question. All right. All right. So each one to each one in Conscious Corner, everybody.
All right.
Praise God. Amen. All right.